Cardale Jones is undefeated as the starting quarterback at Ohio State, but he has still lost his job. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score, 89.7's weekly look at sports. This week, we'll talk to a Columbus Blue Jackets beat writer about the team's historically bad start.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, we'll talk about the Columbus Crew SC. They've clinched a playoff spot. We'll talk to a reporter about their run.
But first, Cardale Jones out at quarterback. JT Barrett is in.
Despite being 10-0 as a starter, Cardale Jones is out as starting quarterback. And it's frankly because of poor play throughout the entire season. JT Barrett came in relief against Penn State and put up numbers we'd expect from a number one Ohio State.
Here for more is Eric Sager from 11Warriors.com. Eric, as Thomas says, Cardale has played pretty poorly at times lately. JT Barrett played very well at times. Is this a case of Cardale losing the job or JT winning it?
You know, I've had some people ask me that, and I think it was a little bit of both, mostly in the sense that Cardale, he had missed some throws in the last few weeks. Even though he played really well against Maryland statistically, it just seems like the offense is moving better with JT Barrett in there. So I think that with Barrett getting more comfortable in his role in the red zone, and then, you know, being the run threat that he is with the personnel Ohio State has, I think that that kind of led him to, quote, win the job. But Cardale, you know, it is amazing. I was thinking about it. He hasn't lost a game as a starter. You know, he's 10-0, and he lost his job. So it's an odd situation. But I think to answer your question, I think it was more JT winning the job, but it was a little bit of both.
I think this offense just runs better with the run option as like the base of every play, where you have Ezekiel Elliott or JT Barrett running to either side every single play really throws defenses off, and Cardale Jones just didn't bring that to
right,
the offense.
Absolutely. I mean, nothing against the guy. He's just not as quick-footed as JT is, and with a guy like Ezekiel Elliott being able to block, you know, on the edge if they do a quarterback straight run, you know, Elliott's a great blocker, and that just serves JT's skill set more. And what I keep trying to tell people, too, is that, you know, Barrett was the first recruit that Urban went and got at quarterback once he came to Ohio State. He was the first guy that he went and handpicked. So he saw something in him that was going to fit with the offense, and we saw it last year. It worked really well, and then we're seeing it again this year.
Cardale will never, ever run the read option as well as JT does. That's JT's thing. But Cardale probably could have kept the job, at least I think, if he had really done what he does well in throwing accurate passes, and they don't have the deep threat they did with Devin Smith last year, but right. he wasn't doing what he was billed as being great at.
Right, and I think a little bit, you know, for that has to be chalked up that maybe he was pressing a little bit, and I say that, you know, last Saturday against Penn State, you know, he just overthrew some guys. Like, guys were wide open, Jalen Marshall, Braxton Miller, and he just missed them, and I don't know if that was him just, you know, trying to be perfect or whatever else, but yeah, he was not performing to the level that we saw last season, and really, frankly, we can't really expect him to, because it's a different team back then, and they were playing out of their minds at the end of the season.
And we've seen other quarterbacks from time to time miss passes or overthrow passes, but they don't have that backup quarterback who was a starter right behind
right,
them where
yeah.
they've come in and out. Is that kind of added pressure that Cardale was feeling that could have contributed to poor play? Because that first quarter against Penn State, that was the worst I've seen Cardale
yeah,
Jones play.
For sure. It was kind of like the final swan song for him. Like, you know, this was your last chance to secure your job as the starting quarterback, and there was three and out after three and out. But, yeah, I mean, you have a guy who finished fifth in the Heisman Trophy voting last season sitting behind you, you know, waiting in the wings. And that's kind of what Urban Meyer was, I think, betting on, was, you know, the potential that the offense could go with Cardale. And they obviously missed, but they still haven't lost the game, so no harm there. But, you know, then you can just pull him down and, you know, insert a guy who finished fifth in the Heisman last year as a pretty good option.
Rutgers they're 3-3. They're not bad. They've given good games. They've had good games against Indiana. They were almost shut out by Penn State, who Ohio State obviously just beat. Is the timing of this just coincidental that it's against one of the worst teams in the Big Ten, or do you think it happened because Cardale has been playing so bad recently?
I think it's a little coincidental, excuse me, but it kind of goes to the sense that I think Urban wanted to do it for maybe against a lesser opponent like Rutgers, because next weekend they don't play. You know, he didn't want to go this yo-yoing back and forth and then have it run all the way through a bye week, and then all of a sudden it's Halloween, you know, you're eight games into the season and you're still kind of unsure at quarterback. So, you know, Rutgers isn't bad, like you said. They can score some points, but it's going to be a game where I think Ohio State's going to win, and I think that, you know, JT is going to have a big day.
It was generally assumed that next year JT would be the quarterback anyway. Cardale Jones still has a year of eligibility.
Right.
What does the future hold for Cardale? Should we start graduate transfer rumors right now?
You know, I don't think that that's necessary, just because I think that when he decided to come back, I think it was pretty much widely known and kind of the writing on the wall was this was his last year, in the sense that, because Ohio State's going to lose a bunch no matter what. I mean, with your graduation or the NFL draft. So I think that he's going to be a part of that. I think he's just going to go pro, because I believe, speaking to him at Ohio State Media Day in August, he said that he was close to graduating. So like you said, graduate transfer is an option, but I just think that, you know, he's going to see, I potentially lost all this money, you know, coming back for another year instead of going when my stock was really high last season. And I think that he'll just kind of stick with that, you know, and kind of get out of town.
Yeah, does he have draft value right now?
He does, just because of his potential. I mean, he's got the big arm and he's a big body and he's a pro-style quarterback. Like, he's a pocket guy. And if he can get guys that he can throw 60-yard bombs to, I mean, those fast guys like Devin Smith, they're going to – I mean, he's going to have success at the next level. He still has some work to do there, but, you know, getting with a good quarterback's coach, I think, can help him improve.
A lot of people who argued for J.T. Barrett to start at the beginning of the season said he could handle a benching better than Cardale.
Yeah.
Now it's the opposite. Cardale started the season. Now he's being benched. How do you think he handles this emotionally? He's a guy who's seen as a little more immature, if you will, than J.T.
Yeah.
Barrett.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that that is one of the things that Urban was kind of playing in his mind, too, is that, you know, J.T. was a sophomore captain. He's a mature guy. He always has been that way. But, you know, this is going to be a hit to Cardale's ego. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he's gotten, you know, all the love on Twitter, and he's been Ohio State's, all their fans, like, have been, you know, adoring him since what he did last season in the postseason. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch that. But I think that it is going to be something that he's going to have to overcome, because with the way that, you know, JT runs the ball and with the offense and how they're going to use him to move the sticks and score points, you know, he could get hurt again, and then we're in the same position we were last year.
We're talking about the quarterback job at Ohio State with Eric Sager of 11Warriors.com. Eric, let's shift now to the game this weekend. Ohio State goes to Rutgers, an 8 o'clock game at Rutgers. Rutgers has had an up and down, mostly down season with turmoil with their coach, Kyle Flood.
Yeah.
Some of their players have been arrested. So what should Ohio State avoid from happening on Saturday?
Well, the biggest thing is whether or not their best receiver, Leonte Carew, is going to be healthy enough to play. He sprained his ankle in last weekend's wild game. They went to Indiana and won 55-52 after trailing by 25 points in the third quarter. They came back and won. So he says that he's playing, but Kyle Flood, their head coach, on Wednesday said he wasn't for sure yet. He's, you know, still questionable for Saturday. So that's the first thing that Ohio State's got to avoid, is getting him going, because he has 9 touchdowns through 4 games receiving wise. So he's their best option. And then, you know, it's a new stadium. It's a night game. You know, it's a new place. Ohio State hasn't been. Urban Meyer's never been there. A lot of players on this team have never even been to New Jersey. So that in itself might be a little weird. And Michigan State, you know, they struggled to beat Rutgers a couple weeks ago in the same scenario, a night game at High Point Solution Stadium. So that's, you know, Ohio State's got to be on watch, but they have more talent and should win the game.
Give us a prediction.
I think Ohio State will win pretty big, but, you know, they're going to give up some points. I think it'll be 49-24.
49, they still don't crack 50.
Nope, not yet.
Eric Sager from 11Warriors.com. Thanks again.
Thanks.
Columbus Blue Jackets have done next to nothing this year.
Yeah, it's really never good when you say the worst since World War II. But that's the start the Jackets have had. They've had the NHL's worst start since the 1943 New York Rangers, who were decimated by players going overseas to fight. That puts it in context how bad this start is.
They're 0-8-0, and after losing 7 straight, they fired head coach Todd Richards and hired John Tortorella, formerly of the New York Rangers and Vancouver Canucks.
That's right. And here on the line with us now is Aaron Portsline, the Jackets beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, how has everything gone so wrong these first few games. This is a team that was supposed to make the playoffs, according to a lot of people. How has everything just fallen apart so quickly?
Well, that is a multi $68 million question, you might say, the cost of their payroll. I mean, nobody could foresee this. Nobody could foresee this club playing so far below their ability. That's why Todd Richards was fired. It's been all over the place. I think you started to see them come out of it a little bit last night against the Minnesota Wild. But in the first seven games, and partly last night, just horrible play in their defensive zones. Derek Bobrovsky has had a terrible start to the season. I'm not using those words to pile on. I think they're accurate. He has an .835 save percentage, almost 100 points below his typical save percentage. It's been all over the place, though. Good players with good track records playing way below their ability. You started to see them come out of it last night. I'm curious to see how they play in Colorado. Tortorella is going to change things. He may add some confidence back into this group. I think that is his first challenge.
We've got a lot of talk about this team, but let's start now with Bobrovsky because you talked about him a little bit. He said, I think to you and to the Dispatch, that he has lost all his confidence right now. What does he need to do to get his confidence back? Is it simply to win a game, or because right now they haven't won one yet?
Yeah, well, the direct quote to Sean Mitchell of the Columbus Dispatch was, I have zero confidence right now, which that's a rare thing for a goalie to come out with that. I think what he needs to do is exactly what happened last night. They played a pretty smart defensive game around him. He needed to make 20 saves. He needed to make 23, but he made 20. It was an easier game for him to play. He wasn't challenged as much. He was challenged way too much in the first five games he played this season. They didn't have the huge breakdowns. They sort of cut his dinner into small pieces, if you will, last night. He made some big saves at the end of the second period to make it 3-2. I think you look for little pieces, for steps, rungs on the ladder, if you will, to start your way out of something like this, because I don't think you can prove it in one night. But he looked like he was a little unconfident or missing his confidence early in the game. It seemed like he's gradually picked it up, and they played a smart game around him. I think that's where it needs to start.
This is a team that a lot of people picked to go to the playoffs, even win a playoff series, if not two or three. The players are just underperforming. Is there anything else at play here? I mean, Richards was fired. Coaches are, you know, they're like quarterbacks in football. They often take too much blame or get too much credit. But I guess I'm trying to get at how Bobrovsky has no confidence, or how these defensemen are playing so poorly, and how everybody is just fallen apart and fallen so short of expectations.
Yeah, well, the beautiful thing about hockey is it is all intertwined, right? I mean, the forwards, they don't just score goals, they also play defense. The defensemen are also responsible for offense, and the goalie relies on all of that around him in order to make saves. I mean, if there's a complete and utter breakdown, and that's what it's been, it's really hard for goaltenders to succeed. Now, Bob's been part of the problem. He's allowed several goals, typically one a game, that are just unacceptable at the NHL level. But he also reached a point really quickly this season where he had no faith whatsoever in the play around him, no belief that the play was going to be handled the right way. That's how bad the breakdowns were around him. There were games where you would almost see him creep out of the net, almost like he felt like he needed to be a third defenseman on the ice. And when you see that, those sort of just basic breakdowns at the basic levels of hockey, the DNA level of the sport, wow, you've got big time problems. And it's going to take time to turn this ship around. But I honestly, watching last night's game, it was the most competitive, competent game they've played since the first 55 minutes of the opener. It looks like it's maybe starting to turn around. They cannot be this bad. We know that this is a competitive team. It's the worst slump they've ever had. It's the worst start to a season, as you said, in 72 years. But man, it's been galling to so many people to watch this happen.
There's obviously been buzz in Columbus about the new head coach John Tortorella, but there's also been buzz nationwide and up in Canada and overseas. Everyone seems to be talking about the move of John Tortorella to Columbus. What kind of coaching style, and I know it's been talked about a lot, but what kind of coaching style does he bring to this team, and how will it affect them down the line?
Well, he's a demanding coach. He's the type of coach that 20 years ago would not have stood out that much. He stands out now because there's a lot of sort of new age mentality that's come into the league, where you communicate with players and you pat them on the back and gently nudge them forward. And Tortorella is much like Ken Hitchcock in the sense that, no, you don't do that. You don't do that. You demand, and if you don't get it, then the player doesn't play. And you saw it last night in his first game. Ryan Johansson, arguably the Blue Jackets' best player, was benched for the final 6 minutes of the game. He wasn't going. Tortorella benched him. Down a goal late in the game, desperately needing a goal. With the goalie pulled, he did not have Ryan Johansson on the ice. That's unthinkable under Todd Richards. It is John Tortorella sending a message. You'll see a lot of those. He plays a straight-ahead style. He wants physicality. He wants nastiness. His best quote yesterday was, "I want us to play with arrogance." That's what he's looking for. He's looking for his team to set the tone and not react. He doesn't even prepare his team necessarily. He doesn't spend much time on the opponent because he wants it to be about what they do. And his idea, his philosophy towards that, which I found fascinating, is you spend too much time on the other team, you put your team in the mindset of counterpunching all the time. And he doesn't want to do that. He wants to be the team that is assertive, the team, as he says, that inflicts. He wants to go get them.
If you were watching the broadcast, I know you weren't, you were at the game last night, but the broadcast, Rimmer and Jody Shelley talked a lot about first impressions with the new coach. Obviously, Brandon Dubinsky, with his time at New York, has had experience with Tortorella, but a lot of these guys have never met or played with him before. And Alexander Wenberg went out there and made one of the best first impressions you can make under a new coach. Is that the kind of play that's going to be demanded from Tortorella from these guys?
Well, you know what? All of the beauty of Tortorella and the frustration for some players is it's the same for everybody. There's a level of demand. It doesn't matter first-round draft pick or what the name is on the back of your sweater. The demands are the demands. I think Wenberg is going to be fine under Tortorella. Wenberg is a brilliant defensive player. Brilliant. He anticipates defensively as good as any player on the team. I think Tortorella's cool with that. I think Johansson's going to have some issues with Tortorella. It's a body language thing. I'm curious to see where it goes. You'd hope that Johansson figures this out and handles it the right way, that instead of trying to prove this coach wrong or trying to defy, that you confront this and you do play harder. Brandon Dubinsky figured it out in New York, but it wasn't easy. Those two had a lot of run-ins. And it was interesting to me that on Tortorella's first day, he got all of the contract stuff out of the way, met the front office people. The first person he met with, he walked into the room, he went looking for Brandon Dubinsky, because those two need each other now. They didn't need each other in New York. Dubinsky needed Tortorella, but here they both need each other. And Tortorella's going to rely on Dubinsky to get his message to the room, to interpret it, really, translate it for the players. This is what it's meant. Don't take it personally. Just keep working. And I think Tortorella needs him as well. Feedback. It's crucial.
Finally, Aaron, on a lighter note, John Tortorella, also known for many of his outbursts and really contentious relationships with reporters at all of his stops in Tampa Bay, New York, and in Vancouver. You dealt with him in the first post-game press conference Thursday night as a coach of the Blue Jackets. How was he, and how do you expect him to be, and what do you anticipate with your relationship as a reporter and a coach?
Well, I don't pretend to know him, but I've dealt with him for a number of years just in the job that I have. I'm looking forward to covering him. As I've said, and I think a lot of people who do what I do would echo, I would rather have a coach give you 8 to 10 seconds of pure, unfiltered truth, especially if it's nasty or pointed, rather than a coach blather on for 3 minutes with corporate speak and generalities and blah, blah, blah. At his opening, you could see his charm, Tortorella's, at his opening press conference. There were times where he almost drifted from John Tortorella to John Tesh. There was some talk about feelings and listening and everybody getting together, and you're like, who is this guy? It'll come out eventually. He does. None of it's personal with him. He's one of those, he's an East Coast Italian who doesn't mind arguing with people, doesn't take it personally. gets into shouting matches and forgets about it 2 hours later. I'm fine with that. I think he's fine with that. I guess we'll find out where this goes. But yeah, for me, it's gonna be an interesting ride.
It will be a lot of fun to watch. Aaron Portsline covers the Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. The Jackets off to a historically bad start, 0-8 to start the season. That's the worst start in the NHL since World War II. Aaron, thanks again.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Two years ago, the Columbus Crew were kind of a mess, really. They were going through coaches left and right. They hadn't made the playoffs. And now they're turning things around under new head coach Greg Berhalter. They've made the playoffs 2 years in a row. That's after clinching a spot this year. The Crew wrap up the regular season Sunday against DC United. Here with us now is Pat Murphy from the website Massive Report. Pat, the Crew already have guaranteed a playoff spot, but they still have a lot to play for on Sunday against DC, right?
Correct. Yeah, there's still quite a bit on the line for the team Sunday evening against DC. They, a win and they can finish second in the Eastern Conference, which would the top two teams get a bye in the first round, which is a one game knockout round. And so they would like to obviously avoid that and move on to the Eastern Conference semifinals, where it's more of a two leg type of format that that gives them a little more flexibility.
But on Sunday, they will be missing two of their best players. Explain why those guys are out.
Yeah, Federico Higuain, who's kind of their playmaker in the midfield, and then Kai Kamara, both suspended. They picked up yellow cards in the last game, and MLS has a rule in soccer in general, yellow card accumulation over the course of this season. Once you hit a certain number, you miss a game. And both of those guys picked them up last week. Kamara was very outspoken about how he felt the league, hasn't protected him, and he got called for kind of a simple foul, a basic foul that, he wasn't warned about it earlier in the game, but he was given a yellow card in the second half, and he was real disappointed not to miss out because he's had such a great season and could with a goal on Sunday, could finish as the league's top scorer.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that. He has 22 goals at this point. That's twice as many as his previous career high, and it is good enough for second in all of MLS right now. How did he make this huge leap forward?
Yeah, I mean, he's always been a good player. He started his career out in Columbus, and you could see even as a young guy that he had, potential. Always been a very freak athlete, can jump, is fast, all that kind of thing. Over the course of his career, he's been used in different positions. You mentioned his best year, and that was in Kansas City. He was kind of used on the right wing in kind of a three-pronged attack. And then he went overseas for a couple of years. He came back, and he really just kind of fits into Greg Berhalter's system. He's the lone target forward up top, and that allows the team to kind of, cross balls into him, play balls into his feet, and they create a lot of chances, and he's been the benefactor of that. It's kind of that point man up top, and, his finishing has been off the charts this year.
Let's get back to the playoff format. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the first-round knockout game. Explain the rest of the playoffs and specifically how aggregate scoring comes into play.
Yeah, so the top six teams in each of the conferences make the playoffs, and then teams 3 through 6 will play in that one-game knockout round, 3 hosts 6, 4 hosts 5, and then they go on to play. Play in the semifinals, which is a two-game series. Home and away, the higher seed will host the away game second. And it's basically total goals. But if the goals are tied at the end of the series, it'll go to the team that has more away goals. So there's a little bit of weight there. So when you play your away game, you're not just trying to sit back and get a 0-0 tie. There's some benefit for scoring an away goal. So even if you lose in that first, say the Crew get second place and then they will play away to start the Eastern Conference semifinals, when they come, or they'll have a benefit of scoring, in that game. Even if they lose 2-1, if they come home, now they have that away goal, which could be the big tiebreaker there.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to Greg Berhalter, yeah. the Crew's coach, the Crew have improved pretty well in each of his first two seasons under Berhalter. He seems like the long-term future there at the head coach position.
Yeah, I think as long as he wants to be here, I think they're going to keep him, barring any unforeseen circumstances. He kind of was handpicked by, recently new owner Anthony Precourt. And they want to have this kind of newer style, possession attacking style that appeals to a younger owner like Anthony Precourt. You've seen around MLS a lot of teams have gone to these kind of younger coaches, former players. Greg Berhalter played for the U.S. national team. He played over in Europe, and he played in Major League Soccer under Bruce Arena, who was the U.S. national team manager for a long time and one of Major League Soccer's best coaches. So he's got the pedigree in terms of, you know, guys that he's worked with. He started his career over in Europe briefly before coming back here. And like you said, it's been successful. The team hasn't won anything yet, but, you know, they made significant strides last year from not making the playoffs to finishing third and being one of the hottest teams in the league to end the season. And then this year, you know, things have been good. I mean, you know, the chance to finish second in the East is right there for them on Sunday.
How do they match up against DC? Do you think they can win that game, or will they win that game?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good game. DC doesn't have to win to necessarily finish second. They're in second right now. You know, a win for either team guarantees it. But, you know, DC could potentially, depending on other results, get a tie and still finish second. So it kind of depends on DC's approach. DC's a pretty veteran team. They've got guys that have been in the league for a long time. But, you know, it's been a good series between these two over the last couple of years. So it should be a fun game. I think, you know, it'll be tough without Kamara and Higuain, but they have depth on this team, you know, guys that can step in. And, you know, I think they're determined to finish second. They've talked about it for, you know, the last third of the season, and, you know, it's going to be you know, quite the drive from the team to make that happen.
How good can this team be in the playoffs? Are they a championship caliber team?
I think when, you know, I've said this a couple times with people, when everybody's there, when you've got your, you know, starting 11, and then you've got the, you know, the guys you want to bring off the bench, and you're not having to, you know, insert guys that maybe aren't necessarily starters, this team is really good. You know, Will Trapp is a guy who's missed time, and he's a center midfielder, missed time earlier in the year. We've talked about that with he had the concussion issues, mm-hmm. And he also had missed some time with the youth national team. When he's in there, he runs things, and the guys around him can kind of do everything else. You know, so when they're at full strength, I think they're, you know, nearly as good as any team, if not, you know, one of the top teams in the league.
Pat Murphy covers the Crew for MassiveReport.com. The Crew in the regular season on Sunday, and they've already clinched a playoff spot. Pat, thanks again.
Thank you.
Now for a look at the weekend in sports.
That's right, looking at the NFL, the Bengals still undefeated. They are off, and the Browns play the Rams at 1 p.m. on Sunday. That's in St. Louis.
Shifting now to college football, we talked about Ohio State. They have an 8 o'clock game against Rutgers. A couple other games I'm looking at is USC and Utah. They play out on the West Coast. They start at 7:30. Utah, of course, is number 3 in the AP rankings. One more game I'm looking at is Clemson and Miami. Clemson, of course, sitting at number 6. Miami unranked, but still has potential to be a good game there. That's at noon.
And getting back to soccer, as we've said, the Crew hosts the DC United Sunday at 5 o'clock in Crew Stadium here in Columbus.
And the Blue Jackets are trying to find their first win of the season. They play Saturday night in Colorado against the Avalanche. That game will start at 9 o'clock Eastern Time.
And that will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. You can find a full archive of episodes using the WOSU Public Media mobile app and on iTunes.
You can also follow us on Twitter at After the Score. Until next week, I'm Thomas Bradley.
And I'm Steve Brown.